2020 was the year of the nurse and the midwife, and the momentum has continued on in 2021 as we enter the year of the health and care worker, as designated by the World Health Organization. Women make up 70% of the global health workforce, and 80% of them are nurses and midwives. I'm Sarah Barnes, and you're listening to Friday Podcasts, hosted by the Wilson Center's Environmental Change and Security Program and Maternal Health Initiative. Today, we bring you the second podcast in our three-part series featuring Indigenous midwives from around the world. Globally, Indigenous women experience worse maternal health outcomes than non-Indigenous women due to a variety of challenges, including lack of access to health services, systemic racism within their country's healthcare system, and the dismissal of traditional birth practices. Indigenous midwives, who typically serve women in their own communities, can improve health outcomes for Indigenous women by providing quality and culturally appropriate care. This series has been made possible with the generous support of the International Confederation of Midwives and UNFPA. On today's podcast, I had the pleasure of speaking with Nicole Gonzalez, a Navajo midwife practicing in New Mexico. Nicole is the founder of the Changing Women Initiative, a nonprofit organization dedicated to renewing cultural birth knowledge and developing culturally centered reproductive wellness for Native American women. Nicole has been a practicing midwife for over a decade, working primarily with Native American and Indigenous women and families. Thank you, Nicole, very much for joining us on this early morning.
It's nice to be here.
So, as a way of introduction, Nicole, can you speak just a bit about what led you to become a midwife and what it means for you to be a Navajo midwife working primarily with Native American and Indigenous women?
In my culture, because it's a matrilineal culture, we usually will introduce ourselves with our clan system. So I'll do that first, just to honor my community and my lineage. She'en Nicole Gonzalez Nishin. Glashchi'i Nishle Do Tochi'i Bashishin Ishkaisoi Desha Chin Anastasia Deshinale. Yes, I'm a Navajo midwife, or in our culture, Dene, which means the people. So I grew up in New Mexico, primarily in the Four Corners. I'm one of eight children. I moved more central into Santa Fe, the capital, when I married into a Pueblo community, and I have three children. And so when you ask this question of like, what led me to become a midwife, I feel like it's like a series of events over a couple of years that I probably can't cover in a podcast, but basically seeing the needs in my community not be met, the healthcare needs, the socioeconomic needs, specifically around women. As a Dene mother, I gave birth in hospitals with all of them and had some very interesting experiences just growing up being a brown woman in New Mexico. Thankfully, New Mexico is pretty diverse or multiverse kind of state, because I went to a high school that was primarily Navajo. You know, we had maybe one or two people who were not from that community. So I grew up surrounded by people who looked like me and talked like me. And my mom spoke Navajo to us at home. My grandmother's primary language was Navajo. But unfortunately, like a lot of young Navajo women, and even to this day, I grew up also experiencing some sort of abuse in my families, alcohol, drug use, those sort of things didn't miss where I grew up and how I grew up. And so they really influenced how I see the world. And also like being a mother of three children, like I had my first child when I was 20, newly married and navigating the world as a brand new mom. It really impacts how I talk to women now as a midwife, because there's a lot of, I guess, internal feelings about how you mother and how you present in community. There's also how people perceive you as being a young mother and assumptions that they make about you. So that was one piece of it that pushed me becoming a midwife. The other one was working in Indian health services for a little bit as a brand new nurse and not only experiencing lateral abuse and violence from my coworkers in that setting, but feeling like the women in my care and in the care of, in that system, they received care, like very basic bare minimum, but there was a level, like there was just detachment I saw from their birthing experiences that I saw in a hospital outside of IHS, so like in a private hospital. I saw women from other communities really embracing motherhood, really empowered and like birthing unmedicated and talking about different birthing options and methods and support systems. And I didn't see that happening with Native women in the hospital. And so I really questioned why that was. And that really led me down this path of requiring me to go back to my community and ask lots of questions. And it's still interesting to this day when I talk with Native women about birth, there's a sense of something is missing, but we don't really know what it is. And it's so interesting that it's been like two generations that Navajo and Native women, at least in New Mexico, have been birthing in hospital, that we've been separated from our traditional birthing knowledge and methods for two generations. Because like, if we used to birth in our hogans with our family and ceremony and herbs and songs and medicines, like we've lost a sense of self with that birthing process being taken away from us when that shift happened in the hospital. And maybe it was an intentional process, or maybe people who came into our community that were healthcare medical folks didn't understand this connection we had to our bodies as women. Because really, like, we're a matrilineal society, so our culture, our traditions, our clan systems, even how we do business, and even like if I'm working with a Navajo family, I would be talking to the grandmother, you know, she would be kind of like the matriarch in charge. So like, we're very like female woman led type of community and tribe. So that doesn't interface well with a colonial system where it's very patriarchal, very male driven. But also it doesn't even speak to gender issues, or like, you know, there's this whole wave of white feminism talking about empowering women. Like, me as a Dene mother and a woman, like I'm already empowered, like because I walk side by side with my culture and my community, like I'm already empowered, like there is a balance there already. The imbalance came when the colonial system came and was forced on us to like navigate the world in a different way. So for me, returning that balance and returning that power and working with women was about becoming an Indigenous midwife, and also understanding that it's a lot more than just my credentials. Like I have, yes, I have a bachelor's degree in nursing and I have a master's degree in nurse midwifery. However, how my community sees me and how I see my role as an Indigenous Dene midwife is, you know, we are medicine people. Like my community keeps me accountable. My medicine people keep me accountable. So it isn't just this like credentialing system, licensure, the agreement that I have to have just to work in, again, in a colonial system outside of my community. It's a lot deeper than that for me.
And do you think, Nicole, for the women in your community, what's bringing them now to change something that's been the norm for two generations? You know, are women coming to you now more frequently than they had in years past? Has there been a change in your community?
Yeah, there's absolutely been a change. I mean, I've been talking about Indigenous midwifery, I would say probably 10 years when I chose to become a midwife and I started to do presentations about ceremonial birth practices and medicine people roles. And over the years, like, thankfully, I mean, it's literally taken this long for that message to get out there. When I chose to become a midwife, I saw that there were issues in my community. And I saw like women who did have diabetes and hypertension and drug addiction issues. And, you know, there were real like health disparities, health comorbidities that were affecting birth outcomes. And so I felt like I needed this medical training background to manage some of those things. And that's how I see midwifery and right now is like, you know, we have all these options to train and to learn about nutrition and herbs and body work pharmaceuticals, and like those are just tools in my tool belt so I can really take care of my community the best way I can. I came into this work with, I guess I would say, like rose-colored glasses, like optimistic and wanting to meet everybody and assuming people were coming from the same place I was with building community. And you know what I ran into over the last 2 or 3 years that I did that work with other Indigenous midwives was there's a lot of trauma. There's a lot of mistrust. There's a lot of people looking for community and for to be part of something larger than themselves. There were just some spaces that I was not prepared to hold. It also made me recognize that I had some internal biases and also some trauma that needed healing before I could hold that space. And I also saw like the strong need to share ceremony and traditional teachings, but because the US is home to 500 plus federally recognized tribes, and I mean, even more unfederally recognized tribes, one teaching doesn't reflect all communities being served. And also many definitions of what Indigenous midwifery is kind of came about because we all identify differently with the word midwife and also the word Indigenous. And that's another thing I learned in my travels, like going to Canada, they want to be called Aboriginal, you know, going to Mexico, they want to be called Indigenous. And in the United States, you know, we want to be identified as American Indian or Native American, but those are US government definitions. So it's important for me to be like, I speak for Dene midwife perspective from New Mexico, but I do not speak for all and every Indigenous Native person in the US. You know, everyone's path is different. I know a lot of people identify with my experience and my pathway, and a lot of what I share publicly on my social media sites, it's a very personal journey. And being very vulnerable publicly, like that's not easy, but I find that the more vulnerable and open I am about my experiences, like it opens up conversations for deeper discussion, and that's what I like the most.
Yeah.
But like, am I seeing more Native women navigate towards birthing outside of hospital in a ceremonial way because of change of womanship? Yes, definitely. And it's because I've done all that legwork ahead of time to educate community, you know, to talk about my journey, to share knowledge and information on social media. You know, my writing is another really good educational pathway. So it's taking me like 15 years literally to get to this point. And I always laugh because women want to sit with me and be like, tell me everything. And I'm just like, well, you know, it's taken me 15 years to learn all this stuff. You know, you can't learn it in a weekend. I could share my books with you, but you're going to still have to come to your own conclusion when you read stuff. Spend time with your own medicine people and your own healers, because they will bestow a beautiful gift of their knowledge. And that's another thing, is like, you can't pay a fee and you're going to get all this knowledge at once. There is something to be said about working for that information. That also makes you accountable for what you know and how you share it. So I'm very thoughtful about that process. There's always a lot of emphasis and an interest in like ceremonial traditional birthing practice. Like people want to know, like, what herb did you use and what song do you sing? And like, that's really private information. And as somebody who's has the ability to know that information that's been passed on to me, like I also have to be thoughtful about what platform I share that information. There's also there's an issue in midwifery where traditional knowledge information is taken and it's repurposed, it's repackaged, and then somebody is selling it for like $30, these sacred teachings.
Wow. Yeah. Nicole, thank you for sharing all of that. I think, you know, it's really an important point about having to work for the sacred teachings and being thoughtful about the information that you and others share. And I'd like to now shift to talk about your writing. And I know you've written quite a bit about Indigenous and Native American birth and midwifery, but I've also seen that you've written about reproductive justice and Indigenous feminism and the intersection of all these issues and ideals. Can you just talk a little bit about the intersectionality between all of those and how they impact Native American maternal health in your perspective?
I a lot of the curiosity and experiences I share publicly and in my writing has a lot to do with also my own experiences. And I think there's a lot of relatability around that. So again, a vulnerable moment. My parents are divorced and I have 8 siblings. We have a blended family. So like already that family structure, there's a lot of people can identify with that. My mother was physically abused by my father, and that's why they got divorced. And so there's that physical abuse in my background. I personally was sexually abused and raped when I was young. And so there's that relatability issue with Native women, because a lot of us are raped and abused, as well as experiencing depression and suicidal ideation in my teens, which a lot of people can identify with that. And so coming from this place of like, there's all this trauma in my past that I'm having to turn in and move into being a mother who's supposed to be nurturing, and like everything is given to my children. Like I really struggled with that process of becoming a mother and loving being a mother and all the sacrifices mothers make. I didn't quite understand that process. And so I turned to Indigenous feminist writing to understand that past for myself and basically heal some of those wounds as to why they happened, and also how they impact Native women becoming mothers. A lot of women have a mother wound. You know, their mom wasn't around, their mom hasn't been supportive, or their mom was also trying to mother in her trauma and from her past. And so there's that understanding already. And then same for fathers, like their father wasn't around, or there's some sort of father wound that men experience. And so you have this couple trying to bring this child in who have these past traumas that they're trying to work through as they become parents at whatever age. And so that for me, again, that Indigenous feminist piece plays into like our identity as Indigenous women and how it's separate from the feminist perspectives of, you know, we need to be equal to men, or like they're already starting from a place of not being equal or not having the power to make decisions for themselves, or, you know, whatever that landscape looks for them. I know there's different versions of that feminist movement, but the Indigenous feminist movement comes from this place of like, we already are in a place of power in our community. We started out there, you know, as we've integrated more into this Western view of what a woman is, those powers got taken away from us. You know, that people wanted to just talk to the men, and systems put into place that were specifically supportive of men versus women and couples and families. So I see the intersectional issues of like missing, murdered Indigenous woman movement. One of the top 5 reasons that Native American women die while they're pregnant is due to partner violence. And so that's where that missing, murdered Indigenous woman piece comes in. And then as far as empowering, empowerment, women learning about who they are and their identity, that's the Indigenous feminist piece that I already kind of talked about.
Yeah.
Birth can be transformational and powerful. That's the time most women, they realize they're birthing a baby and they're like, wow, you know, I want to eat healthier. I want to maybe not be in this toxic relationship anymore. I have the opportunity to change things for this child that I didn't get growing up. So as well as the preparation for birth, if you were to birth in a hospital, especially now with COVID, like they're only allowing 1 or 2 people at the birth if you're lucky. And even that families had to really fight for. But if you birthed at home in a hogan, traditionally your husband or partner was there, your mother was there, your support system, your sister, aunties were there. Everybody had a role. Somebody kept the fire. Somebody got the fire ready. Somebody said the prayers. There's a medicine person outside. The midwife was there. So like already, like maybe there's 5 people there supporting you. And having a hogan birth isn't easy. There's dirt floors, there's no heating, there's no light. You have to really prepare the space to have a baby. There's also like ceremonial preparational things that our culture, our Dene women do prior to birth, like a blessing way ceremony, which helps restore balance and stuff. And you do it right before the baby comes. So there's a lot of preparation prior to this baby even getting into your arms. A lot of Dene women are looking to have this kind of experience, but they've been separated from this traditional knowledge. So like not everybody has a medicine person they can go to for support. A lot of some of these medicines we use in birth, like how do I get access to them? And even like having the ability to sit with someone like myself to talk through what it means to be in ceremony with their baby and what their roles are and how do we prepare emotionally and spiritually for this birth, for this baby that we're bringing together. The Dene, the Navajo, we have sage and cedar and sweet grass. Like these are medicines that we use for prayer. They also have medicinal purposes, antimicrobial purposes. It's interesting, like our ancestors knew this already. But if this couple is bringing this baby forward, I usually will advise them to like pray together in the morning, you know, set your intentions for your mind and your spirit for this baby and yourself every day. If there are medicines that you use for that, then use them. And then thinking about food, like there's a huge movement now about food being a form of medicine for our bodies. And so I have more women interested in traditionally, what did we eat? So you can see how this time in pregnancy is very transformational for a lot of families. And it's an opportunity to also break trauma from the past, mother and parent in a different way, reconnect with ancestral knowledge, change and eat foods that are more specific to what your gut is, to where you grew up. There's a lot of opportunities for families to connect with their babies.
Wow, Nicole, again, thank you for your honesty and for sharing your own very personal story and how that's led you on your path. Your work as a midwife sounds quite varied and vast, and I'm wondering what other resources are available in your community during pregnancy and the postpartum period?
Yeah, well, New Mexico is home to 23 federally recognized tribes, like Santa Fe, north of Santa Fe, there's like 8 Northern Pueblo communities. So Pueblo land territory is definitely a different tribe. They navigate differently. Their systems are different. South of Santa Fe is there's another 10 Pueblo communities. There's also Apache communities. And then of course, my tribal reservation, which is covers Arizona and Utah. That's a large, vast area of community as well.
Yeah.
So when you ask about other resources specific to Native communities, like Te Women United is definitely a huge asset to the community. They've been here a long time. They do lots of work around land and relationships, as well as this women's health piece. They've been working on a pilot program and they've been training Indigenous doulas. And they created their own curriculum and their own program. And they're a huge asset. We work a lot with them. There's some other Native-led organizations in Albuquerque because some of our families live there. It's interesting to see how tribes and communities are working around this maternal health issue. There's not a huge push for more Native Indigenous midwives. There's a push for home visiting programs. And so I know historically, like in the last 30 years, home visiting programs has been popping up left and right because they've been shown to be successful because they go into the home, they do provide education. We know that works. We also know that midwives can and do home visits, and that's why midwifery model works. So there's that part. As far as trying to create resources and communities, that is a goal for Changing Women Initiative. Like we had trained some Navajo doulas last year in Window Rock. We trained over 39 of them. And because out there in Gallup, Window Rock, like there wasn't any doulas. There's like 3 or 4 hospitals in the area. There isn't the option to really birth outside of hospital unless somebody's going to do a free birth on their own. I know there's only a handful of 2 or 3 midwives who serve those areas and those communities because it is so far. When I go out to those areas, it's a 3 to 4 hour drive one way. So it's an all day trip for me. I mean, I make that drive every other Friday. I go see families out there. And so it's like, how do we create resources in our communities from women who live there and are invested there without having to take them out of that community? I would say the first 3 years I started doing this work, I spent a lot of time traveling to Washington, D.C. and California, to other communities to talk about Indigenous midwifery from what I saw in my community. I spent a lot of time educating policymakers about how decisions were made in community, what the challenges were for Native women to access maternal health care. And it came to my attention a couple of years after I spent a lot of time in doing that. How is it possible that people from other states and other communities and even like organizations can make policy decisions for Native communities who've never been there, who don't know what our problems are, who don't know our traditional systems? That doesn't feel okay to me. An issue I run into here in New Mexico is serving my reservation because it covers three states. You know, my licensure covers me in New Mexico, but it doesn't cover me in Arizona or Utah. So do I have to license in those states to catch babies? How am I exempt from some of the barriers as a licensed nurse midwife in New Mexico to catch babies on my reservation because it covers three states? And I don't think that issue's ever been brought up before. So we're challenging how decisions are made and who's in those decision-making bodies. And I recently went to the ICM conference in Canada a couple years ago because I spent a lot of time again with the Aboriginal midwives who had a good portion of the conference being able to present about their issues. As I sat in the crowd listening to my own representatives from my own country be shocked and surprised by what was happening, I was like, hey, you know, we are the invisible communities in the US. We have these same issues. We are invisible to you. It's interesting that you're choosing to pay attention to what's happening in Canada, but in your own country, you guys are part of the problem in making us invisible. And so when I go to these conferences and I hear how bad our health outcomes are as a Native person, how short our lifespan is, for me, it's like, why are we choosing to pay attention to these negative things? Like, yes, we know those things are terrible, but there's also a lot of factors that lead up to those statistics being bad, right? There's a lot of failed things that have not been in place for us. Like the missing murdered Indigenous woman, you know, we celebrate a life that's no longer there, but we had every opportunity up to that point to save and support this person, whoever that is. And so it's the same thing for Native women. You had every opportunity to support us prior to this person passing away in childbirth or around the time of childbearing, having a baby. And so when we fail or women like that, of course, those numbers are going to look terrible. I mean, if you ever read anything about us, it's like we live thousands of years ago. We're dying out. If you read any headlines, it's like our language is dying, our women are dying. And my pushback is we're not going anywhere. We're not dying. We're not thriving either, but we're trying to, right? And that's part of returning Indigenous midwifery knowledge to our communities is to thrive again, to bring life into our community. Yes, there's lots of death, but birth and mothers bring life into community. And I help with that, and midwives help with that. Doulas help with that. There's these support systems that we're trying to recreate to thrive again as Native people, and it's not easy.
You are definitely correct that your story and your message can't all fit in one podcast. There's a lot to absorb and reflect upon from all that you've said. And I do have one final question before we wrap up. You brought up a little bit about leadership and respect and politics. And so I wanted to talk with you briefly about Representative Deb Haaland of New Mexico being nominated as Secretary of the Interior by President Biden. And Representative Haaland is from the Laguna Pueblo tribe, and she is the first Native American to be nominated at the secretary level of a president's cabinet. So I'm just curious what this appointment could mean to you and to your community.
I have to say, I'm very supportive of Deb Haaland. I've never met her in person. I also understand on my own level of leadership and how challenging it can be to be a Native woman in leadership, period. And I can only imagine some of the challenges that she's had to face just to do what she does. She has championed maternal health issues and policy for Native communities in the last couple of years. I want to say in 2019, that her office, as well as others, collaborated and helped host a listening session in Washington, D.C. to talk specifically about reproductive health issues that Native communities were facing. So the discussions that were brought up were, of course, maternal health care, midwifery, access to birth control, access to abortion care, the missing murdered Indigenous women, the sex trafficking issues. And so it was this very broad discussion about all the issues that Native women are facing in the US. We were thankfully invited to be part of that discussion. What I like about Deb Holland is, or at least my understanding is, it's when I talk about the challenges of being a Native woman in leadership is like, how are we going to lead? Like, it's a question I've posed to myself for the last 10 years since doing this work. Because for me, I came from a place of needing something to change in my community. And my path has led to this organizational development piece and having to speak about issues that are uncomfortable for people to talk about. And constantly engaging tension all the time with my question, with my character as a Dene woman being put into question every time. And as I sat with other Native women and other women from other communities, Black women, Hispanic women, this discussion about leadership continued to come up and like, how do we lead as Native women? And I feel like, and I know like Deb Holland isn't a good example of that, right? When she goes into these spaces that are all white, like you see her wear her traditional clothing, her moccasins. She's always bringing her community wherever she goes. She brings the language, she brings the culture, and she knows she represents her community and all the spaces that she occupies. And that's how I feel about leadership as a Dene person, as a Native midwife, and the work that I do is I'm also representing my community every space that I go. So when I did my introduction and introducing my lineage that way, I was bringing my ancestors into the conversation. It was also a reminder that I'm not here occupying this space by myself. And that also that I also have to respect and represent my community in a way that reflects my values and my cultural teachings as a Dene woman. And every space that I occupy, I have to come in that way.
Thank you very much, Nicole, for being with us today and for sharing so much of your life journey. And we look forward to having more conversations with you down the road.
Yes, for sure. I look forward to this being shared publicly and would be happy to share more teachings or information.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to this edition of Friday Podcasts, the second in our series with Indigenous midwives. Stay tuned for the final podcast in this series when we'll speak with a First Nations midwife in Australia. To learn more on these topics, find us on the .mom column of newsecuritybeat.org or follow us on Twitter at @Wilson_MHI. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to Friday Podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you.